Hey there, boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages. I gotta tell ya, this is Fish and Frank and Robert in the chair across from me. It's Fish and Frank and Robert. We're from Fish and Frank's, and this is some kind of radio show broadcast on WKDW Radio 97.5 FM out of Northport, Florida, and broadcasting to the whole universe everywhere you go. We're going to be doing lines and leader, and Robert and I got on the phone. Gary, he's from Pure Fishing, and we have a question because I was able to get him, so we're going to start off the show right away with Gary. And I got a question because I'm looking over all my leader. I got all these different leaders for fishing line and to catch fish with, and the question I have is, now we have two, Gary, and say hi, Gary, by the way.
Hi, Gary.
Okay, there's Gary. He's there. All right. And Vanish Fluorocarbon Leader. Now, this is a cold question. You're completely unaware of the question, so you may or may not be able to answer this. We have a VLM, and then we have a VLMC. The VLM is in a small spool, about usually 25 yards. Sells for around $10. Excellent value. I use it. It's Vanish Leader material. And then there's a Vanish Leader material. It's more money, and it's a VLMC. What's up?
There's no difference in the material. Difference is in the package. And now, they don't always come in the same weights, so there's some overlap, but the larger spool, you know, comes in the heavier weights. That little clam, that little pocket spool, only goes up to, Robert will kick me if I get this wrong, but I want to say 30 or 40 pounds off the top of my
50.
Head. 50, okay, 50 pounds on the little guy. The other one goes up to 100.
Gotcha.
But as far as the material goes, same material. It's just, for whatever reason, it's a better value to buy on the small spool.
Okay, because
no,
that's
no rhyme or reason.
Now that's the one I usually use. But now, to me personally, I take that because it fits inside my box. I can carry a little bit of stuff with me, and it's an excellent way to go. I do end up taking it and running my fingers over it a few times because the smaller spool seems to coil it up a little bit. But it only takes, I use the friction between my fingers, pulling my fingers through it to make it straight again, and then it works great. I've used it.
Yep.
I have it on the boat right now, as a matter of fact.
Yep, and you'll see more of the coiling at the heavier weights. So, you know, the pocket spool, you know, I would say is ideal at like 25 and 30 pounds. When you get into the larger weights, you do see that smaller spool does tend to hold a little bit more memory in the fluorocarbon. So you have to treat it, like you said. You can kind of work that memory out with a little bit of friction with your fingers. And,
yeah, just hold one end and pull it through the fingers of your other hand, unless
yep.
you only have one hand, and then pull it through the fingers or pull it through your toes.
Yep. Yeah, you can find something.
Yes. Robert, do you have any questions for Gary?
No, I mean, that was actually a pretty good one.
What we're going to be talking about is, and I'm going to get your opinion of line. Invisibraid to me is probably the top line of lines, as far as castability, durability, and all that.
Lack of wind knots.
Just, yeah, all around, it seems to be like the top of the line. We're going to be going over all the different lines because we carry so many. We've got, you know, a lot of different brands. But getting into your brand, your line, what's the deal with Invisibraid? Tell our listening audience about Invisibraid. If you got any technical aspects, that would be appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, the short version on Invisibraid, it kind of goes back to when you're making a recipe. If you use the absolute best ingredients that are available, you have a pretty good indication, you know, as long as you put it together right, that you'll make a pretty good product. And that's one of the things with Invis. I mean, there's multiple grades. One thing that I'll let a cat out of the bag. People don't know this. You hear the word Spectra, you hear the word Dyneema. Those are the two basic raw materials that go into making up braids, and they're very similar. And as a matter of fact, if you take them all the way back to the root source, they're basically the same. And then as they're crafted, there's some subtleties that make them different items. But what people don't know, everyone knows that for the most part. What they don't know is there's multiple grades of that material. So in Dyneema, there's more than one level of Dyneema. Same with Spectra. And without telling things I can't tell, I can tell you that Invisibraid uses the absolute highest level of Dyneema. Dyneema is believed by most people to be the better of the two materials. I can tell you that legally they're the only ones that can say the world's strongest fiber, because it's the world's strongest fiber.
Well, so, that helps.
I mean,
if you're, you know, in a world where everybody is saying the word lie all the time, it's, you know, it's nice to get fact into that.
Yep.
I do have a question now. Outside of being really good material, okay, using the top line material, two questions. One, where is it manufactured? Two, why is it different than normal line?
Well, we build it in Spirit Lake, Iowa, and it took a lot of, one. I'd love to be able, I wish that we used to have sort of a virtual tour of our plant in Iowa, but we don't. I don't think it's online anymore, and I don't really know where to find it. It seems like they're more worried about people finding, you know, people knocking stuff off, so they kind of keep a lot of that stuff secretive.
Well, of course,
because kind of like Mercury's testing plant, you know, like Loop Zero kind of thing.
You have a whole thing, and I hate pointing out, how does he say it, China? They do not respect U.S. patents or European patents. They only respect Chinese patents. And if unless you have the Chinese patent on it, they produce everything, sell it within wherever they can get away with selling it, and without paying any U.S. royalties or anything for somebody's property. So that's one of the big reasons nowadays.
Yeah, so, I mean, and another thing to bring up China, since you brought it up, one thing you'll see now is you see on the market an influx of low-priced braids, and that coincides with an influx of Chinese superline-type material. So there's a third player now. I mean, you've got Dyneema, Spectra, and then you've got the China stuff. And you can call it, I don't know what we're calling it internally. There's multiple names for it, but I just call it the China material. So that's a third player now that's on the market, and that's why you see the influx of the lower-priced braid.
Yeah, the problem with the China material is they slap whatever name on it they want. They sell it very inexpensively. It goes back to the same thing I found in monofilament. You pay a high price for premium-grade monofilament, so it has the exact same strength or stretch or lack of stretch through the entire spool. What you find with the Chinese material is it's very strong for 3 feet, and then you have a quarter inch that's half as strong.
Yeah, a lot of inconsistencies, no doubt.
Very inconsistent, and that's one of the big things about the China stuff is it's not a consistent product. It's made to be very, very inexpensive.
Right.
And it's a rip-off that they got mostly right.
It'll do the job. I mean, for some of the things. I mean, if you're going to use, you know, 100-pound test and go grouper fishing, you know, I wouldn't necessarily try to talk a customer out of some Chinese braid. But, you know, if you're going to put 10 or 15 pound on a spinning reel and cast a lure all day, it wouldn't be my first choice.
It would be my last choice because by the time I spend the money, get the time to go, do all that, and then get the fish on and have the line fail because there's a weak spot somewhere in that material, and, you know, you're flipping quarters. It's a lot of money. My time is precious. When I get out of the water, we were out yesterday, had a ball. It was so relaxing. It was absolutely amazing. Actually caught some fish and had a nice time, but to have that ruined because of cheap material is just not worth it.
Well, it's a funny kind of phenomenon. You know, people, I've interacted with thousands of consumers. And, I mean, over the last 20 years, maybe tens of thousands. I lose track. But I can tell you that consumers are very cognizant of rods. You know, probably rods more so than anything. And then reels come second. And line is an afterthought. You know, line just, sure, jam some 15-pound on there and forget about it. And,
yeah.
You know, to your point, the Invisibraid, you know, it shines on those.
Coming back to the Invisibraid, the one thing that makes it stand out in my head, and I really want to get this thing in because we've got a whole bunch of topics to cover. But if we don't, we don't. You know, it's a radio show, you know, and it's our show. We can do what we want, I guess. But the polar bear hair aspect, to me, I'm actually pounding my hand into my other hand going, the polar bear aspect of Invisibraid. That is probably the key issue separating Invisibraid from other braids.
Yeah, and I haven't really gone into what makes it up. So you've got the best materials, okay? And then you'll hear people talk about how many carriers does a braid have. And then if you really get into people that, are techie, you'll hear the word pick count. And those are really the terminology.
Is that P-I-C-T?
So, it's P-I-C is the way I see it
written.
Okay. But basically, your carriers, each one of those carriers, the carriers are the main strands, and each one of those is made up of little tiny microfibers that you're not really going to distinguish. But if you were to somehow unwrap a braided line, that would be the strands that you saw would be the number of carriers. And so generally, for the inshore type casting applications, an 8-carrier is most desirable at most weights. And so Invisibraid is, in fact, an 8-carrier. And
that kind of stands to reason because you said it was the most desirable, but you've been hawking it pretty good, so.
Yeah,
I'm thinking to myself, I say this is in fact, so I'm getting myself, getting this. We're getting
there. Yeah, we're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. So it's an 8-carrier, and then it has an exceptionally high pick count. And what a pick count means, basically, and keep in mind, I'm not an engineer, so I speak somewhere a language in between engineering and regular guy language. So basically, pick count is the number of times that those lines twist each other, twist over each other in a 1-inch section. So rarely will you see a manufacturer distinguish a pick count or give that to the consumer, but basically, higher pick counts tend to be better.
You've got Robert nodding his head like and giving that kind of weird little frown thing. Oh, I didn't know that.
It's actually pretty interesting because, I guess the tighter it's woven, the more durable it would be.
Is it durable or castable?
All of the above. And then there's a third part as well. So, and the third part is what sort of a sheath or coating or covering do you put over it to fill in all the little bumps created by the weaving? So imagine it like this. You got these 8 strands, and you weave them together somewhat loosely. You've got these large valleys and high spots when you do it that way. Now, if you take the same exact 8 strands and you weave them very tightly together, those valleys and high spots and low spots become lower and tighter together. So when you put in some sort of a finishing touch to it, there's less of that finishing stuff required.
Yeah, okay.
And so if you feel Invisibraid and you take a, it's more pronounced at like 30 pounds. So if you were going to do this at home, I'd take out a spool of 20 or 30 and you run your fingers down a section of 3 feet, and put a little bit of pressure and run your fingers down it. It's very smooth. It's not aggressive on your fingers. It doesn't burn you per se.
You don't feel the bumps and ridges.
Exactly.
You don't feel it at all when you're casting it, really, compared to some of the other lines.
Exactly. And so what happens is those bumps and ridges, as they're firing through the guides, regardless of what guides they are, even the best guides in the world, they're still little points of friction. And the Invisibraid, by the process, by the material, by the way that it's built, and by the coating, which is that third part, it eliminates a lot of that. And it also adds a little bit of body to the line. People love the idea of a super limp line. And it's great at 65-pound tests. But if you take a super limp line and put it at 10-pound test and try to cast it, what you get generally is a big, giant wind knot that you can't get out.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Now, just to go back over, what we've learned is the carrier lines are the main fibers that go through the length of the line. And then you have a pick count. And the pick, P-I-C, I guess it is how many times they're woven together per square inch.
Per inch, yeah.
And then you have a coating on top of it. That's how lines are put together.
Basically. You could have a line that has no coating whatsoever.
Yeah, we've got a couple back there, and they feel like I could use them to saw tree limbs.
Bingo. Those are going to be lines that have little refinement. Now, they're going to be generally less expensive because it's a cheaper process. And, again, if you want a line to put down 100-pound test for grouper fishing or maybe real heavy line for shark fishing. I'm not going to tell you that a more refined line is going to be any better per se for that application. Those are times where that cheaper line, as long as it's made with good material, might be a good choice.
Okay. So,
but now, I tend to stay away from the China material.
All right. Now, the whole thing about this is we've got Spectra Dyma and the Chinese knockoff stuff. Then we've been talking about Invisibraid. What I like about what I want to get, not what I like, but what I want to mention into this is people say, well, it gets really fuzzy. And you try and explain to people, Invisibraid is the one line where the fuzzier it is, the better it is. It becomes more invisible as it gets fuzzy.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, and there's some personal preference there. I interact with a lot of consumers that feel like Invisibraid gets better as it ages. They feel like it becomes more pliable. It tends to cast even further. I'm one of the people that sort of stay on the other side of that a little bit. I don't have any problem with it right out of the box. You know, I think it's just as good right out of the box, and I personally can't really discern any difference as it ages.
From what I've been described, I was at one of the meetings in the Pure Fishing thing. I was talking to one of the line guys, and they said the little fuzzy parts that stick out help make it invisible by refracting the light around it better and much more like polar bear hair would.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why as it gets fuzzy, a lot of people seem to think they catch more fish with it after they use it for a little while, because it literally renders itself more invisible in the water. Now, I don't know that to be fact or fiction, but that's what I was told by one of the engineers, kind of coming into play with what you said about some people believe it's better as they get older.
Yep. I think there's a lot of things in fishing that it doesn't really matter if it's fact or fiction. If you believe that,
if it works for you.
If it works for you, exactly. Yeah. If you have faith in that lure or that line, and as you continue to use it, you think it's getting better and better, well, there's probably a little more confidence. There's probably the time that you take a couple extra casts. You probably maybe don't eat the whole sandwich before you start casting again. I mean, all those things come into play, so it doesn't matter. Fact or fiction, I can't tell you whether that is or not, but I can tell you if you believe it and people buy into it, then it's probably going to mean they catch more fish because they probably spend more time throwing the lure.
All right. Well, this is WKDW Radio. You can find us on KDWRadio.com. We're 97.5 FM broadcasting out of Northport, Florida. We're reaching Port Charlotte, Englewood, Venice, and all our friends in the agricultural areas and people in between everywhere. Go to KDWRadio.com. And if you like the program, you get click the donate now button, toss in $2, $5, or, a couple of thousand if you really feel like it's a great show. I'm not sure we're worth that much, but I think, for $5, it's not too bad. So, anyway, we've got Gary, and Gary is from Pure Fishing. Most of us know him as the pen guy. You've seen him at all the tent sales. He was with us in Fort Myers. We had a great boat show in Fort Myers. And Gary was a big part of that down there. We sold a lot of pen stuff. A lot. Now, am I allowed to talk about, I'm going to talk about it. We're doing Amazon price match right now on pen reels. So from now through the holidays and that, you can come in and get, the best deals on pen with all the great in-store warranty and everything else that Fish and Franks does so cool. Robert, what kind of questions do you have for Gary? He has other lines you have questions about.
He answered the main one that I liked about the Invisibraid, because I use that a lot. It's one of my more favorite lines. Learning that.
Well, I don't mean to step on you, but I'm going to, because we're running out of time with Gary here. Spiderwire in general. Now, we have the green in just the Spiderwire, and then we have, are they going to keep the green and dark green camo, or is that one going away?
I don't have a definitive answer for that yet. So,
because that's one of my favorite lines once you hit 30 pound and up. I honestly don't like it in the 10, 15, and 20. I'm not even stocking anymore. If they ever get it fixed, I'll go back to it. But in that green camo and the blue camo, I think they're amazing lines once you hit 30 pound and up.
Yeah, and that's part of what you don't like there on those lightweights for the inshore type applications is that they're not eight carriers. So they're six carrier lines. They're exceptionally strong, but they're just not going to cast as well as, you know, even close to as well as the Invisibraid. And at the lightweights,
I like the green okay. I have no problem with that. For some reason or another, the green in the 10, 15, 20 seems to cast and perform pretty darn well. I don't know. Maybe it's in my head. You know, we were just talking about this, but I think in the, what's the name? Tracer, which is a line I used to really love in the light ones, but I'm not crazy about it now. Maybe my technique changed. And in the blue camo, I love those lines for as far as grouper fishing, trolling, all that kind of stuff. But now the green, I do great with that in the 15-pound test. I've got it on one of my rods, zero problems. It throws good. It's, you know, it seems to be a good line. Now, is there a big difference in the way these lines are made when they put the color on them, or is that just color wax or something?
No, the material is dyed, to put the color on. And in some cases, especially with the camos, the process, I'd be hesitant to say that it weakens the line. I don't think that that's the case, but it certainly, you couldn't,
change the consistency maybe?
No, not necessarily. It's just, nobody knows how right now to make a camo line that would act like Invisibraid. Now, okay. I'm not saying that it's not being worked on, wink, wink, but as of today, nobody has a camo line that acts like Invisibraid. And to get that much bright color, you just can't have it be exactly.
Well, there is one line that actually outcasts Invisibraid, but it's such junk, you only get to use it one or two trips and it falls apart.
Yeah, it's probably one of the really limp lines.
Yeah, and it's the problem. My problem is at that price of braid, I'm too cheap to use it. If I was gonna, just do a tournament in severe open water and I only had to use it once, but Invisibraid lasts longer than almost anything. But
that's kind of to your point. You know, we end up, we all want to go fish every day, but none of us have the ability for the most part. Very few of us. So, to me, if I'm fishing a line and it's 30 pounds or down, for sure, if it's 20 pounds or down, I'm putting Invisibraid on every reel that I have. That's just the way it's going to be. Because, just like Robert said, it doesn't get wind knots hardly ever. I mean, I actually have a buddy that we call, his nickname is Wind Knot. And before we started using Invisibraid, if we went on the small flats boats, they only have 6 rod holders, each guy would be able to bring 2. Well, he would bring 4, and we just jam them somewhere because he's going to disable 2 to 3 rods in a full day of fishing. There's no way around it. He's going to get wind knots that you can't get out. Once we turn him on to Invisibraid, if he disables 1 rod every 5 trips, that's a miracle. I mean, the stuff literally has changed his life. So that's the most drastic example I've ever seen. But if you know that there's something that is good, and it's a couple cents more per 100 yard, I'm not skimping there. I'm putting my money on that stuff, and I'm going to use it till it gets fuzzy, and maybe it's, I'm going to continue to use it until... And now, I have Invisibraid that's 3-4 years old. I mean, it's just great stuff.
Well,
I don't know why you use anything
change
else.
It till it goes bad.
Sure.
We try and tell people, especially like, say, you were bass fishing, you could put that on as a teenager, and there's every realistic possibility that when you retire, you could be using that exact same spool of line. Now,
absolutely.
In salt water, it's less likely because of salt and sun and everything else that the line could possibly fail. But it's made out of the same material as technically this. If you boil it all the way back to the beginnings, it's the same stuff they make boats out of. And you don't throw your boat away until the boat goes bad. Robert, do you have any questions for Gary?
I had a question about the fluorocarbon leader material. You know, the Invisibraid or the Vanish itself, as far as the abrasion resistance versus, say, regular leader material, is there a major difference between that, as far as a benefit? Because we already know that the Vanish has, or all your fluorocarbon bends light and makes it virtually invisible. What about the abrasion resistance?
Yeah, if you've got true 100% fluorocarbon, okay, which Vanish is, then you have the the a refractive index of light that's pretty close to water. So that's pretty well understood. Basically, it reflects light similar to water, so it's less visible than something with a refractive index of light that's further away from water. So the closer to the number you get, the less visible it is to the human eye, and science says to the fish's eye. From an abrasion standpoint, there's three other things really about fluorocarbon that people don't really talk about much in the saltwater world. Now, in the freshwater world, all the things I'm about to tell you, pretty well understood, pretty much taken for granted. One, fluorocarbon sinks a lot faster than monofilament. Two, fluorocarbon stretches a lot less than monofilament. And three, generally speaking, fluorocarbon is considerably more abrasion resistant than the monofilament. And those three things are very well understood in the freshwater side. And the saltwater side, we don't think about any of them, except for maybe the abrasion and certainly the invisibility.
So if it sinks more, then it could change the aspect of your lure that much more, or your bait itself.
It can, yeah. I mean, generally speaking, what are we using? A 2 to 3 foot segment of leader?
Correct.
And if we're throwing a light, a topwater, and we're throwing 30-pound leader, I'd be hesitant to say that it's going to change the action much. But, the heavier the fluorocarbon gets and the longer the leader section is, then certainly you have the potential to change the action on your lure. Sure.
I don't know. I'm gonna go along with, I don't believe it would change much of anything. It doesn't look to me with as short a thing as it would change it. Maybe with a shrimp, like say you're tossing a shrimp and you want it to drift down a little bit more, it might help or not. I don't know, if you're working a lure constantly pulling it, I don't know if that would make any difference or not.
Yep.
Because of the constant motion.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was just curious about, because, I mean, I'm sure that's what some of the freshwater guys, that's why he's explaining with the freshwater versus saltwater, because it seems like bass fishermen want to dissect everything possible.
Good for them. I'm on their side. Good for them.
No, I get it.
The more
it.
You
no,
learn. Look at what we learned about line count and pick counts and
absolutely.
All
no,
the rest
I'm
of
good with
stuff.
That. That's why I was kind of curious to know if that would make a difference with the saltwater aspect of it.
So here's the saltwater joke. If you've been around this industry long enough, the saltwater joke is the guys out in California, they take the time, they dissect every aspect of the gear. They pull the reels apart, they change the grease, they put different oil in it, they blueprint their drags, they do all these other things. The guys in Florida, we don't have time for that. All we want to do is go fish. We don't have time to take everything apart, because we can go on any given Saturday, whether it's December or February, doesn't matter. We can fish all year. And that's the joke. For us in this market, it's beautiful. I mean, it's gorgeous today. You could go fish today, and it's almost December.
Yeah.
Most of the other country, they can't do that. Most of the rest of this country is, dealing with ice, snow almost already. So,
or just the nasty conditions. Yeah, well,
sure.
I don't
yeah.
even, like with our customers, they expect Robert and I to do that for them. They come in and they want us to know what it's about. That's why we have conversations with you. That's why we're sharing it on the radio. This is what we do all year. We talk to everybody to find out all these intimate little details. And that's why I called you today, because we wanted to break down and get into some of this line and find out what it was about, because line is a very important thing. I mean, if you throw a lure out and you don't have a leash attached to it, you just gave the lure away. The idea is to be able to throw something out and actually bring it back with reasonable expectation.
Exactly.
So, all right, here's my last question for you. When I'm going to make a statement, then I'm going to ask you the question. I still have a rod with monofilament on it, because on the flats, open water fishing, I think monofilament simply catches more fish. I've got 10-pound big game on one. I'm going to load another one to 8-pound. And I still think I get more hits off the mono. And when I hook monofilament line to fluorocarbon leader, that's very sneaky. Now, when I'm fishing with braid, I don't mind putting a swivel in between the braid and the leader, because braid is very visible. Even Invisibraid, which is probably the least visible of all lines, it's still a physical presence in the water to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your thoughts, monofilament versus braided line? Is the super braid, what do you prefer and why would you prefer it? Or is there situations where you prefer one over the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit similar to what, you know, to what the freshwater guys, you know, kind of go with. I'll keep it saltwater. So basically for me, if I was trout fishing and I wanted to use something that had treble hooks, that would be a good time for me to play around with monofilament because, you know, a trout, we all know, kind of a softer mouth. You know, they're going to pile on it pretty good with the strike generally, but, you know, the braids sometimes, if you really lean on them, you know, you pull the hooks out of their mouth. So those would be the types of times, you know, where I'm using a plug, you know, that I might be using monofilament. And sometimes the plugs impart a little bit of action with monofilament. That delay in the, you know, that stretch into monofilament as you're working the plug, for some people, it certainly helps to impart a better action to the lure.
For me, it's where am I using it? I think monofilament is too dangerous against the mangroves, heavy structure, because you can't break it. And if the whatever it is, you're pulling on it, it stretches and pulls and stretches and pulls, and all of a sudden the thing shoots off the mangroves coming back at you like a bullet. I've been bruised, had hooks in me. I've seen people who actually had sinkers embedded in their leg because of monofilament. So I use braid against the trees and heavy structure because you can give a sharp jerk on it and create more pressure than the line will hold, and it will snap because it does not have stretch. Whereas monofilament, it's very hard to break it. The stretch is so much, and then all of a sudden it comes shooting back at you like a missile. But in open water, I think it's sneakier, and I can use 8-10-pound test monofilament and get the good cast out of it. 6, 8, and 10 is what I use on the open water. I think I'm getting in. I don't have to worry about it breaking. So I use open water. I think I prefer monofilament against the mangroves. I want the braid. And isn't it weird because I'm using the braid because it breaks easier?
Yeah, it is funny. Well, not only those are all really good points, but also, you know, same exact application. With the braid, you may be able to bend your jig head out. Then all you have to do is bend it back or tie a new jig head on instead of re-rigging your whole leader. You know, there's certainly, I would say that for the average consumer, you know, the braid, you know, the average guy that's got 5 or 6 rods and reels and he's going, you know, fishing everything from a live shrimp to a, you know, to a sabia or a, you know, a chunk of gulp, you know, for that guy, he's probably best served by braid most of the time. But to your point, I would absolutely keep one rod with monofilament in the arsenal. If the fish are spooky, you could use live baits with the monofilament. You can throw your lures with it. There's certainly times where it's going to equal a couple fish extra, or it might be the difference between not much happening that day and some really good fish.
Well, and I think the harmonics are different under the water, so in certain areas where the fish are a little bit more high-pressured, I think that braid line is making a different tone under the water that reduces my bites, because I know behind my house I experiment with it, and I'll get 3 times as many bites on my mono as I do with my braid, especially with some of your more elusive fish like your mangrove snapper that tend to be a little bit more spooky. The bigger snook, I tend to catch a few bigger snook behind my house on the mono than I do the braid. Now, and I don't know if that's fact,
the
harmonics, or fiction, but...
But I'm going to clarify harmonics. Let's say you're out in the boat, it's a windy day, and you've got a rod rigged, you've got the hook and the hook holder, the line's tight, and all of a sudden you start hearing this zzzz, these noises, and it's literally the line vibrating in the wind. And you know, you pretty much never hear that with monofilament. It takes a lot more very specific conditions to make monofilament sing like that, although it's possible. But it does, even when they both sing, they sing at a different frequency or pitch. And is that what you're talking about, Robert? The sound, the vibration as the water. Let's say you have a strong current going, and the line would make a ringing or vibrating sound in the water.
Correct. That's kind of where I'm leaning towards. You know, your water current is, no matter what, even if it's 1 mile an hour versus 3 miles an hour, there's still a different sound there.
Okay. Gary, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, here's what I would do. Here's what I do. If I'm going inshore fishing, I've always got one rod rigged up with mono. If I get to a situation where I think I should be catching a fish and I'm not, or if I think that the situation best warrants mono, I grab that mono rod and I use it. And like you said, there are times where I feel, my personal belief, that that mono rod has caught me a few fish that maybe I wouldn't have caught with braid. But it's very easy to make the converse argument, because there are certainly applications and times where the braid equals more fish, no question. You know, bottom fishing, the ability to feel the lure better, you know, to feel what's going on. So really, there's still a place, I guess to answer your original question, there's still plenty of place in the world for what we're doing, what we do in Southwest Florida and everywhere around Florida. There's still certainly a place for monofilament in our arsenal, no question.
Okay.
I agree with that. Because, I mean, I always try to carry two rods with me, one that's got the mono and one that's got the braid.
Yeah. We're doing a lot of stuff. I've been actually made a vow to myself that I'm going fishing. I've been out trying to get out at least once a week. I'm trying to make it much more often because, you know, it's one thing to be going off of a lifetime of memories. It's another thing to be going off what happened the other day. So getting out on the water and getting all this stuff is critical. So breaking it all down, what we did, and this started out a show. We were going to talk about a lot of different stuff, but we've got you. Do you have a few more minutes, Gary?
Sure.
Okay. Because I want to go into, because you're the pen guy. All right. Now, I got to tell you, I've been out fishing, and of all the factory preset combos I've ever held in my life, there are two that are outstanding. I mean, just absolutely, to me, amazing. One is that new Battle Pink combo, the Passion. Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right, Robert. You were passionate about that Passion. You got it. It was like, wow. All right. The Passion. I love that combo. The wife's using it. She used it yesterday. Got a beautiful redfish. Weirdest thing about that redfish, it was 22 inches long, but when I brought it up, I thought it was like 25 or 26 because it was 5 pounds. It was 22 inches long and 5 pounds. Monster. Wow. Redfish. That Passion combo, what is it? It's made for a woman, and to me, it's strike. Now, I have the 2500 version. I haven't fished the 3 or the 4000 yet, but I did the 25. It feels so different than a standard factory combo. Then I want to get to my all-time favorite, the nicest factory preset combo ever in existence. But this is my number two. And I think because it's not made for me that I don't like it as much as the other one. Is that true?
Probably. Yeah. What I can tell you for sure is that it wasn't just another piece of equipment that we made the color pink and said, here you go, ladies, here's your rod and reel. There was a lot of thought that went into it. There were numerous test groups of women, some of which shop in your store. Some of the women that tested the equipment, you know, they live around you and they shop in your store and they could attest to it. But basically, we took feedback from, you know, a large pool of women anglers, both novice, you know, professional, and all of the feedback was, you know, dissected, and that's what comes out of all that effort.
What were the changes? I mean, it's not like a man's reel.
No, it's not. One of the biggest changes that we found through the feedback, and these are things that I think, I mean, I've done this my whole life. I would have never thought this. If we'd have just said, hey, I want to make a ladies' piece of equipment, and they'd have just asked me, this wouldn't have been one of my things. But I can tell you that one of the highest, highest ranking pieces of feedback that came from the ladies was the gear ratio. They did not like how fast the reels that the men use are. They felt like it took away some of their pulling power. They didn't like the effort required to turn the handle. And so we played around with numerous gear ratios and sent them back out. Some women got gear ratios that were A, some women got gear ratio B, and so on and so forth, and we landed on a consensus of a gear ratio that allowed the women to have the power that
now,
was more comfortable.
This is important because if most of our listeners are probably of the age that understand a manual standard transmission in a truck, and you start off in first gear, you get a lot of power, but you're going very slow. Second mm-hmm. gear, a little less power, a little faster. Third gear, fourth gear. And once you get up to fourth and fifth gear, you're moving very quick, but the vehicle does not have a tremendous amount of power. As you drop back to third gear, you can go up that hill. You can maintain some speed, but you've got a lot more power. And that's what you're talking about, is as you turn the handle, how the strength of the gear ratio to allow you to bring in the fish. Because a woman's wrist is one of the main differences between male and female. Most, the bones in a woman's wrist is different than the bones in a man's wrist. They're constructed, we all know the boys and girl difference, but the wrist is a big thing, and we find that testing rods all the time. What feels good for a woman does not necessarily feel good for a man. Now, so the gear ratio is different. The coloring is amazing. It's actually pink. It's not, but it's a very good color rod. What was the decision of making it a split butt?
Well, that came through the testing, and you'll notice that if you pick it up, that the grips are somewhat thin. Also, the sizing, the spacing on the grips has to do with the forearm of a woman. And so when the average woman picks up that piece of equipment and nestles it in their forearm, it fits them very well. You'll notice that all of those wind grips are tapered in a direction that allows it to kind of rest really well against a woman's forearm. And one more thing on the gear ratio. It wasn't just as simple as changing the gears. We also got in feedback that the women didn't like the length of the handle arms. So we also took that into account and shortened the actual handle arm. So if you were to take like a Battle, for example, which you can physically see shares a lot of similarity in looks to the Passion, the handle will be longer on a Battle, size for size, than it would be on a Passion. And that just had to do with the distance that the women feel comfortable with cranking.
The thing that I was also impressed with was it has good guides on it. These are not the cheap guides that most combos come with. This is an upgraded guide system. It's got a beautiful blank, beautiful upgraded guide system on it. You guys actually spent money on this rod. This isn't just
we spent a lot of money on that rod.
It's not, okay, all right, here you're going to buy the reel. Now we're just going to throw this rod at it and make the rod as cheap as possible just so you can get it cheap. This rod had a lot of thought for as far as money spent on guides, handle. The reel seat is nice. I was pretty impressed with that. I know this is probably a little boring for some of our listeners, but most of the time factory preset combos are not this way, and that jumps me right into the Conflict 2 combo. Admittedly was not a big fan of the Conflict 2 reel. I thought, okay, it's a reel, yeah, it's lighter and all that. But when I picked up that combo, I fell in love. I have fished that thing every trip out. If I put a line out with bait, it's on somebody else's combo, and I'm holding that Conflict combo. That Conflict combo is amazing. It's got good guides, great blank, balance. The best factory preset combo in history for a man or a woman, but I got to tell you, the Passion combo is unbelievable for the women. That Conflict 2 combo, what brought that about? Why, after all this time, are you guys putting a really, really nice rod on a factory preset combo? Why isn't it just a throwaway like the rest of them?
So here's the story. You know, with Penn, we become kind of famous for our combos. There's some negativity associated with using an inexpensive rod, let's say, and building an inexpensive combo. So, you know, for the average person that hasn't done the math, the difference between buying a reel and a combo at Penn, historically, has been $20. So you're buying a $20 rod. Now, it's probably a $40 rod, to be truthful, and we give you a discount when you put it together as the combo, but even then, let's call it a $40 rod. That's a relatively inexpensive rod when you're talking about a graphite rod at $40.
And there's just, by the time, okay, you sell it for $40, by the time I get my cut, the factory's paid, the shipping costs, the manufacturing, and all that.
Yep.
There's no money in it, so they don't want to spend any money on it. The whole idea behind a combo rod has always been, okay, let's throw the least expensive stuff on it we can. The least expensive reel seat guides. You notice I'm trying not to say cheap. What was it? You know, all of a sudden now the Conflict 2 comes out, and this rod's amazing. It's great action. it's got good guides on it. They're high-end guides.
Yep. So on the Conflict 2, you know, it was, for us, it was a little bit of a different reel. Okay, so for Penn, you know, we always try to err on the side of durability. This is the first time that we've really experimented with, you know, or we didn't experiment because we took years to build it, but, and Frank knows this personally because he wanted the reel to come out last year.
I've been screaming at Penn for 3 years about this.
Yeah, we've been working on the thing for over 3 years to get it right. And so, you know, for us to build a reel that doesn't have a metal body, I know our engineer guys, the directives that they have to follow, for us to get that done and make it be a Penn, you know, that just takes a long time. And to get a reel that's going to hold up to the standards that we feel like we need to hold up to. So once we put all the work into it, you know, conversation after conversation, we just didn't feel like we could put an inferior rod with it. You know, we had so much thought and effort and work that went into the reel that we thought that, first of all, the consumer that wants that lighter piece of equipment, he probably doesn't want a combo rod. He probably wants a nice rod. So we basically just went to the drawing board. We built a really nice rod, you know, 100% carbon with Fuji guides, a really well-crafted rod, weighed perfectly to the outfit. And we just ate the margin on it. You know, we're eating a lot of money on it. It's worth more than what we're selling it for.
And I'm very, very happy with the combo. I think it's absolutely awesome. I do want to get into, we're getting close to the end of the show here, but the Clash, which is my now favorite pen reel, especially to sell, and the Conflict 2. Now, the Clash and the Conflict 2 are, okay, explain to me why I would want, okay, you're out there in the consumer, why do you want a Clash or why do you want a Conflict 2?
Well, first of all, there's some sizes in the Clash that we don't make in the Conflict 2. So if you wanted a larger reel, you'd lean toward the Clash or maybe the Slammer 3 if you want, you know, the ultimate durable. But assume that we're talking about the average guy.
Okay, throw the Slammer in on the deal. I don't mind. I've got the pen guy on. You know, this was supposed to be a 6-minute segment, and it's turned into the whole show. So go ahead. Throw the Clash, throw the Slammer, throw the Conflict 2 in. Explain to me why I'm going to sell which one to who.
Well, the Conflict 2 is going to be for the guy that's weight conscious. He's probably the guy that's throwing a lot of lures. It's easiest to talk Conflict 2 and Clash. Let's compare the two because they're similar. The Clash is going to have your metal body. The Clash is going to have a heavier drag. So if you're going to do a mix of live bait and lures, a mix of open water and close quarters type fishing, if you tend to be the type of fisherman that likes a little heavier drag, maybe you look at the average spinning reel, you look at the side of the spool, you're going to see, in general, three different weights, okay? If you tend to be, this is an easy way for a fisherman to tend to figure out which reel is better for him. If you pick up a 4,000, you look at the three weights on the side of the spool, and you find that you generally would want to fish the middle one or the lower one, then you'd be a great candidate for a Conflict 2. Because it's a lighter piece of equipment, it's going to have a little less drag, but it has enough to do what you're going to do with those line classes. Now, conversely, you pick up that same reel, and you say, I want to fish the heaviest weight. Maybe I even want to go above the heaviest weight. You're generally not a great candidate for a Clash, for a Conflict 2. To be frank, you're not a great candidate for any of the non-metal body reels from any manufacturer. Because you're generally fishing closer quarters, you're going to put more pressure on the fish. You generally want a reel that's built to hold up to that. That would be a Clash, or in the extreme case, where you want to put more, you know, a heavier line than what the spool actually says, then your best candidate would probably be a Slammer 3. So basically, the Clash and the Conflict, they're built similarly. They both have machined gears. They both have, you know, a carbon fiber HT100 drag. Basically, just one of them is housed in graphite, carbon-infused
carbon
material.
It's a form of graphite. We get that. But the
that's the carbon.
Now,
yeah.
When you go out, when I go out, people talk about in the Gulf, that's where I bring in the Slammer. As soon as they get out in that, where they're likely, even with their smaller reels, to catch an amberjack or a big permit or something like that, I go to the Slammer and the...
Or maybe a guy that wants to tubbin fish. You know,
or the spin fishers. Yeah, the Slammer
or
the spin fisher.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I think of, big fish, offshore fish. Once I get inside, I'm really into the Clash, and now the Conflict, too. I'm a huge fan of it. I wish I could say I was on board from day one, but I picked them up and went, oh, it's okay. But it was the combo that turned me around and got me into this. Robert, we're down in our last 5 minutes here. What's your questions to Gary about Penn?
The drags on a reel. Everyone is so concerned about how many pounds of drag a reel holds. What is the real reason for that?
Well, because, you know, as a culture, I think, of course, a generalization, you know, bigger is better for us, you know. So people see these numbers in a catalog and, they, you know, they think that they need that giant number of drag. One thing you'll see with all reels being the Penn family, we generally understate our drags. So if you look in the catalog and it says it'll get 30 pounds, that means every single one that comes off the line gets 30. You might pick up one that gets 37, one that gets 35. I mean, but all of them will go over what they say.
Well,
that's not always the case with some of our competitors, unfortunately.
I can honestly tell you, one of the ways I have sold a lot of Clash reels is with the customers here. They're telling me, well, I like this one, I like that one. And I take a minute, take the drag washers out of the reel, they're in front of them, and they go, oh my God. When you see what Penn does versus most of their competitors, it's not even close. It's not even in the same universe. A lot of the competitors are still using felt. I mean, literally the same stuff you make a fuzzy, you know, bathrobe for your wife out of or something. I mean, it's just felt. It's nothing. It eats up right away. It's horrible.
Yeah, and we still use felt on some of the lowest end stuff too. There's a place for felt, but to
yeah,
your point,
but not in a $200 reel.
No, sir. No.
Not in a $200 reel. I am sorry, felt does not belong in a $200 reel. If you're relying on only the clutch cap of your drag, the actual cap of the drag to define how good your drag system is, and you're not putting any money into the materials, the Penn material is awesome. I've been a big fan of that for years. Now, one of the things...
Well, hang on. Let me let you in on another little secret. Because this would turn the industry on its ear if anybody's listening to the radio show and actually pays attention. The carbon-infused material, it's cheaper than aluminum. I hate to let that out of the bag, but you shouldn't see felt in a $200 reel, and the carbon-infused material is cheaper than the aluminum frames. So do the math. Look at the reel.
If somebody has an ultralight reel, it actually costs less to make than a heavier reel does.
Well, I can tell you that the frame costs less, so if you can look at the guts, that's up to you. But the material of the frame, it costs less.
I like that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's interesting as heck. But just to remind everybody, we're on WKDW Radio. We're out in Northport, Florida, 97.5 FM and KDWRadio.com. Go on there, click the Donate Now button. We're real community radio, nonprofit group where we rely on your donations to keep this station on the air. We do not get any of the money for it. We are happy to donate our time. We love being part of the WKDW family, and it's just an awesome place to be. But if you can help the station stay on air, we thank you very much for that. Broadcasting out of Northport, Florida to all of the surrounding area and the world and the universe at large on KDW Radio. Radio.com. Click the Listen Now button, or you can hear it on fishandfranks.com on the radio fishing portion. Now, we're literally in the last few moments. This is Gary. He's our Penn guy. He works for Pure Fishing, who owns Penn, and he's works for the factory. Robert's in the chair across from me. Any final thoughts, Robert, on the Penn Invisibraid line, anything, leader?
No, I've been overwhelmed, actually. I've learned a couple of really new, cool things.
All right. Well, Gary has been on the phone with us this whole time, and we sure appreciate that, Gary. Say goodbye, Gary.
Goodbye, Gary.
Gary is our main guy. You can meet Gary March 24th at the tent sale right here at Fish and Frank's. And this is Fish and Frank, and we're running right down to the wire here. And we really want to thank Pure Fishing for spending the time with us today. Amazing thing with carrier line and fuzzy counts and pick counts and reels and bodies and what actually is the truth behind it doesn't cost less to make a light reel, so that's why one Penn's cost less than the other one. Well, we'll see you guys on the next Fishing Zone Radio Fishing, Fish and Franks, me and Robert, and whoever comes up next. See you guys.